Out in the country where a woman's called a gal, she's more than a lover, she's a farmer's best pal. We marry them for life, we marry with a vow, and even in the night we know how to plow. Our children have two parents, our children have a home. They don't grow up with no edible syndrome. We're the backbone of this country, the spirit of its soul. Best you ask for whom the bell tolls. We feed you, we feed you, we feed you, we feed you.
Hello everybody, this is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 10 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling The Elements Speak. The title refers to the elements that create our climate in general and our weather in particular. I interview Art Douglas after his presentation at Spokane Farm Forum in early February. For those of you who may not know him, Douglas is an emeritus professor of meteorology at Creighton University. This was the 29th time he has delivered his long-range weather prediction at Farm Forum. His prognostication for this year's crop is optimistic, but farmers are always looking out ahead, and based on his forecast, planting conditions next fall might not be optimum. Also coming up, elements of a different sort, young men and women that made me feel hopeful for the future of Washington State's natural resource leadership. During a recent Washington Ag Forestry media training, I had the opportunity to interview participants of Class 39. I can't tell you how impressed I was with the caliber of today's Ag Forestry fellows. But first, let's go to my interview with Art Douglas. I asked him to describe changing meteorological conditions and what that may mean for Pacific Northwest weather this coming spring, summer, and fall.
We really had a major change take place in the month of January. After trying to have our La Nina last summer and fall, that kind of collapsed. And then all of a sudden in January, water temperatures off Peru and Ecuador rose more than a degree and a half centigrade to Fahrenheit, and almost a 3 degree centigrade rise since early December. So there's major changes taking place, and we all know El Nino brings warmer weather in the Northwest, favors high pressure ridging, and so it's a dramatic change from the weather we've seen in the Northwest this fall and early winter.
Now, wouldn't one say that El Nino usually brings drier weather? Because certainly there are times that El Nino appears to bring wetter weather.
We can't always say that every El Nino is going to be dry in the Pacific Northwest or wet in California. All we have to do is go back to 2014 and 15 in California. We had an El Nino, but it didn't bring them rain. On the other hand, this time around, we went into a La Nina pattern, and it was wet all the way from the Northwest all the way down to South Central California.
But you're thinking that this El Nino is not going to be the type that brings wetter weather to this area?
I think since we had such a large El Nino in 2014 and 2015, that the likelihood of having another strong El Nino is there. I think whatever this event is probably going to be on the moderate to low side. High pressure ridging is much more common when we have a weak El Nino or a moderately weak El Nino, and that's what we're looking at. If we have a big El Nino, the whole Pacific is super warm. A lot of residual warm water from Alaska down the coast of California. What often will happen is at the decay stage of that El Nino, when it's dying, jet stream patterns are changing, the polar jet can really get out of control, which is what it did this year. And in the process, it just absorbs all of that energy in the ocean in creating really strong storms, and it's super wet. But that's only going to happen maybe every two or three El Ninos, and this is one of them that gave a lot of moisture.
Okay, so we have a lot of moisture here in the beginning of 2017, and your forecast is calling for a drier and warmer spring and summer. Will we get those rains that we need in the spring and summer to bring the crop to fruition?
I think, first off, the amount of snow cover as well as early rains that the Pacific Northwest had in the fall, I mean, soil moisture conditions are in excellent shape. So as we go into the spring, it's kind of like in the Midwest, kind of helps out to dry up and warm up a little. And so the amount of drying we're expecting in, say, March, April, and May isn't enough to really cause a problem for the crop. The real warming and drying looks like it's going to be somewhere towards the end of May, June, and early July. So if the crop is okay, it gets sunnier, warmer in the spring, maybe what we'll see is an ideal situation that when it finally does turn much hotter and drier in June and then later in August and September, that it'll be good for harvest.
You spent a lot of time on your presentation this year on climate change and essentially debunking climate change, or at least explaining the reasons for it occurring that are not man-made. Can you just sort of give me a nutshell of what you're thinking here?
Well, as I go around the country giving talks, climate change is always a question I get. People always want to know what my opinion of it is. And based on my background, which was climate change when I was in graduate school, I have a much broader perspective of climate change, meaning I go all the way back 300 million years and look what's caused climate change. So when we have those slides up there, what I was trying to show them, number one, was, you know, CO2 in the world right now is virtually the lowest it's ever been on record. Now, whatever humans have done to increase it, and they've almost doubled it. You know, when you double it from 0.025 to 0.50 or something, that's okay. But it used to be all the way up there, you know, 100 times that amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. So let's not get worried that the quantity of CO2 is a major detriment to the planet. The other thing is, I showed the Milankovitch theory of climate, which is an orbital type thing with the Earth's tilt plus going around the sun, that with the Milankovitch theory of climate change, which is pretty provable, that we're still in a pattern that favors global cooling. And I showed some more recent research that indicated that with the CO2 that we've put up in the atmosphere, and if we carry it forward in the future, really the next time we're going to have another ice age is somewhere between 25,000 years from now and 50,000 years from now, and that our CO2 composition right now due to humans really hasn't done much to change the likelihood of when the next ice age is going to be. So what am I trying to say there is, yeah, we put CO2 in the atmosphere, but Milankovitch is far more important than what humans have done. But there's a lot to the equation here, and I just wanted to show folks some ideas of their contrary climate trends, which favor cooling, not warming.
Nationally, it is said again and again that 98% of the scientists who study climate change believe that it is happening and believe that man is responsible for it. Are you within the 2% who doubt that?
That's a loaded question. But more importantly, Scott, it was a loaded question. I believe the information you're quoting comes out of the American Meteorological Society. They did a survey of all of their members, and the question was on the survey, and I took the survey, do you believe you can detect climate change in the area where you live? Yes or no?
And your answer?
My answer was yes. Of course there's climate change. We know here in the Pacific Northwest there's this thing called the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. There's a 15-20 year period of cold water along the West Coast, favors drought in the Southwest, wet winters in the Northwest. Then you change it. So the two regions, Northwest, Southwest, are kind of polar opposites each other in terms of what climate's doing. Of course we've seen these changes. But that question they gave did not say anything about the human component. It just simply said, do you believe you have seen climate change in the area you live?
And How would you have answered that question if they had asked, do you believe you had seen climate change in the area where you live, and do you believe it is caused by man?
Well, it's been over a year, probably actually 2.5 years, when they sent out that survey. They did have those types of questions, and they ask you, do you think human activity has caused any portion of this climate change? On that one, I put yes, because if you increase the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere, almost double it, the physics are there that you have to have warming in the climate. So I have no problem with that. But the million-dollar question is, we really didn't get to say what percentage of the climate change we see is due to humans versus what percentage is due to these natural cycles.
Of course, it's important to consider the long history of the planet and its cycles, but like Douglas said, mankind is having an impact. We just don't know how much. I've seen some research that indicates the Northwest will be in the catbird seat, for a while anyway, as the temperature warms and precipitation patterns change from winter dominant to spring and summer dominant. But it's all really educated guesswork, and it will only be generations hence that know the real answer to what we're debating today. Hope we guess right. As many of my listeners know, I was in class 13 of the Washington Agriculture and Forestry Education Foundation, or what everybody who knows about it calls Ag Forestry. For those not in the know, Ag Forestry is a nonprofit with the aim of providing people in the natural resource industries a foundation for pursuing leadership roles within their respective commodity, business, governmental, or private organizations. In part, this is accomplished through a series of seminars held across Washington, including one held in Spokane on the media. As an alumni of Ag Forestry, the organizers of the seminar have been calling on me for years to be the mean old reporter asking questions of a class that, for the most part, haven't been in the position before. A video camera is focused on the person being interviewed, and the responses are dissected by a couple of other media types the next day. As a former reporter, and now as the WGC's Director of Communications and Producer Relations, I have interviewed thousands of people. And let me say right here, right now, thank you. Answering questions with the clickety-clack of a computer keyboard in the background or a microphone and camera in your face is nerve-wracking. I know this because in my current position at the WGC, I can't avoid being interviewed. I'm better at it now, but I'm never completely comfortable. My heart races, occasionally I'll stumble over words, or I'll forget the word I need and use 10 others to get the point across. So imagine if it's not easy for me to be interviewed, what it's like for 20 Ag Forestry participants, most of whom are doing it for the first time. The organizers of the seminar like me to pose gotcha questions in order to get individuals to think on their feet. Sometimes I'm able to make it happen, but many of the participants are from fields I'm not all that familiar with, a requirement of gotcha questions. So I also pose questions I'm just curious about. Both require thinking on your feet. At the media seminar held in Spokane, the class was split in two, and I conducted 3-minute interviews with my 10 unlucky subjects. You'll only hear a snippet of the interviews from 8 of them, and I think everyone does a great job. Brady Hayden might have had the hardest interview because Hayden is a wheat farmer near Wilbur, and I know something about wheat farming, at least from a theoretical point of view. After Hayden told me he used a direct seed farming system, also known as no-till, I asked him if he was a no-tiller who never tilled or a no-tiller who sometimes tilled. That lit a spark.
I'm a no-tiller that does not use tillage. I don't believe that you can be a no-tiller and use tillage.
How are you going to deal with resistant weeds?
Using different chemical packages in the future. Right now, I'm already switching chemical packages throughout the year. There are chemicals out there right now that will take care of the resistant weeds other than glyphosate. There's paraquat chemicals. I think just managing your crop rotations and chemical packages will help prevent that.
Do you think direct seeding is the future of all agriculture in eastern Washington wheat farming?
I believe direct seeding is the future of the world for farming, but I do believe that there is a next step beyond direct seed.
Next up is Reed Britt, a consultant and researcher. He's involved with starting an organic hop farm. I hit him with the "Is organic healthier?" question, and he hit right back. Do you believe organic agriculture is intrinsically better than conventional agriculture? And if so, what do you attribute that to?
I wouldn't say it's intrinsically better. I think that it is a good way to go. I think we learn a lot from it. Our organic production does a lot to drive our understanding of the ecology of it all and the different niches. And a lot of what we do in our organic, we then take into our conventional.
Are pesticides killing us?
I don't believe so. But no, I'm just going to leave it at that.
I was at a real loss for questions for Ian Ickles, who works as a district operation manager for Avista Utilities out of Moses Lake. I went down several blind alleys, but then I thought of his title and asked him the hardest part of managing people.
The hardest part about managing people is just knowing that everybody's different and everybody needs to be managed differently. It's not just one mold fits all. And so I've learned that in the last few years.
I got a couple of good responses from people I asked about regulation as it related to President Trump's promise to cut them. Rebecca Jones works for Simplot as a potato agronomist. I thought maybe she'd push back against regulations, but she went the opposite direction.
I believe that regulations are in place for the safety of food and that the United States produces the safest food in the world. And I think that that is a good trend to be on and that we will continue to work to make sure that those regulations make sense.
So you're a friend of regulations?
I am a friend of smart regulations.
In my interview with Kim Eads, a program manager for the Washington State Department of Agriculture, it's important to hear my question, which is trying to set up a no-win answer. You can almost hear Eads thinking in the pause before she answers. There are a lot of regulations in Washington state government. President Trump wants to cut regulations. Do you support Trump?
I support smart regulations. And if some of those are being more efficient, then I think that's a great way to go.
Chris Magruder is a log buyer for Boise Cascade. Although I've written a few forestry stories in my day, I don't know enough to be dangerous. When I asked him how much wood he had to buy each day, he told me one plywood factory in Kettle Falls was taking 340,000 board feet of lumber a day. How much is that really? Magruder explained the figure well.
Let's see, a typical log truck has about 5,000 board feet on a truck. So if you kind of do the math, we need about 70 trucks a day.
Jenna Weber works for a property and casualty brokerage that acts as the go-between insurers and the insured. She characterized her role as an extension of the client. Her company was recently involved with the settlement of a large packing plant fire. I ask if, as the person in the middle, clients ever get angry at her.
Of course, because there's a lot of emotion involved when a peril or a fire happens, but we work through it and we have to remind them that we are an extension of them and we're representing them. And that's what we do and that's how we shine is when we are negotiating and looking at the policy wording with the carrier, we make sure that they get exactly what they've been paying for.
And finally, we have Jean Snyder, who works for the Washington Department of Health Shellfish Program. Her job is essentially assuring people are eating safe shellfish produced in Washington. She does this by looking for fecal coliform bacteria. Does everyone in my audience know what fecal coliform bacteria is? Okay, most do. But just to be sure, I asked Jean.
Now, when you say fecal matter, I mean, that brings to mind one thing.
Mm-hmm. Poop? And so primarily what we're looking is we're trying to protect people's public health. So we're looking at what the water quality is like in Puget Sound and our coastal waters to make sure the shellfish that ends up on your plate is safe for you to eat.
Whether their responses were thoughtful, funny, or simply successfully stringing together several explanatory sentences without stumbling, I was very impressed by the cadre of Ag Forestry Fellows I interviewed. By the way, the Washington Wheat Foundation helps support Ag Forestry as part of an endowment provided by the Washington Grain Commission. Applying for the Ag Forestry program is kind of like having a baby. There's never a good time, but when it happens, it can change your life. I like to think Ag Forestry had a hand in changing my life. I recommend all you young whippersnappers in my audience, and by young, I'm referring to anyone under 50, check out Ag Forestry. I'll put information about the organization on our Facebook page. It's essential that farmers remain an integral part of the Ag Forestry program. And that's it for episode 10, The Elements Speak. Hope you enjoyed the show, even if you didn't exactly enjoy the forecast from Art Douglas. One of the things I've learned about wheat farming is it's not just about how much rain falls during a growing season, it's about when it falls. Even dry years can have a series of favorable storms that nurse the crop through to harvest. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. For now, anyway. Until next time, I'm Scott Yates, hoping you'll tune in again for another episode of Wheat All About It. Oh, and by the way, if you subscribe to Wheat All About It on iTunes, you won't have to worry about missing any episodes. They will automatically be delivered to your mailbox as they are posted.
You think we're simple, you think we're not bright. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.